This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. What's inflation doing to retirees' bank accounts? Tiger Woods getting involved in NFTs. That's in our next segment. Right now, the Fed releases its latest policy statement at 1 this afternoon. The report on sales of existing homes out today. We're joined by David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors in Denver. David, what do we expect to hear out of the Fed?
I think we'll get some clarity from the Fed today, Cisco. That clarity should say that the Fed will begin this so-called tapering in their monthly bond purchases, maybe out in December. Nothing today in terms of action, but at least some clarity. They're buying $120 billion per month in bonds, and they're going to begin to trim that back maybe in December, let's say $15 billion a month. If my math is correct, it would take 8 months to get down to zero in those monthly purchases. So that's the first step. That step depends on improvement on the unemployment side, but I'm expecting that to continue. Not until perhaps sometime in the second half of next year will we see rate hikes. I think that will all be announced today.
How does the recent stock market volatility, I mean, we've had some big swings today, does that at all weigh into what the Fed is thinking?
I think the Fed is going to be a little bit more cautious in the timing of these two moves, the tapering of monthly bond purchases and then the ultimate rate hike, based on all this uncertainty we've had ranging all the way from China's real estate market to our U.S. debt ceiling. Those uncertainties are significant, but I don't think the Fed can maintain its credibility unless it gives us some direction about what they're going to do. First, they'll be less accommodative, but they won't actually tighten until sometime in the second half of next year.
And moving forward, I mean, also thinking what we've seen in the economy, you have the stock market volatility. A lot of that is because of economic data, inflation worries that maybe it's going to continue. It's still just so much uncertainty, and I don't know how the Fed navigates this.
You brought up the right word, Cisco, inflation. I look at those FedEx earnings. They missed on the earnings side mainly because of higher labor costs. When companies start to see higher labor costs and that reduces their margin, they're going to start raising prices. That means inflation is going to last a lot longer than the Fed chairman thinks. Remember, he said it was transitory. I think it's going to be a lot more than that.
So let's talk about existing home sales. They fell, and yet prices are rising. What's going on there?
Well, there's that inflation factor. First-time home buyers simply can't afford to buy a house. The prices are up too high. Also, there's a shortage of houses, in part because of a shortage of construction workers. Again, going back to that labor shortage side. So we've got an economy that is perhaps going to end up more inflationary than those monetary experts think.
Thanks so much for all the insight. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors. He's the author of the book Understanding Central Banking. Coming up, sports superstars Tiger Woods and Tom Brady teaming up in the digital collectible market. Tiger Woods is releasing 10,000 non-fungible tokens through a company co-founded by football great Tom Brady. Let's talk about it with Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group, author of the book, An Executive Guide to the World of Decentralized Finance. Shelley, NFTs, I mean, they're really not revolutionary anymore. More and more people are getting into them, and it seems like Tiger Woods is just the latest.
Yeah, he really is, and I don't think he's late. I think he's early. Interestingly, they're going to put out about 10,000 images, and the way they've laid it out is 9,700 of them will be priced between $12 and $100. 375 of them are going to be at $100 or above, and then there's going to be 300 where they're signed, special, unique, amazing, between $250 and $1,500. Now, of course, all NFTs are supposed to be unique and special and amazing, so we'll see how that all works. I'm not going to offer any financial advice because I'm not a licensed financial advisor, but I have to say, proceed here with immense caution. There's some souvenir value to the low-priced ones, but I wouldn't be banking on the secondary market for a lot of this. You know, it's not like there's scarcity here.
Well, and that's what you would need, right? You would have to have something in an NFT that a lot of people want, that they think is really cool, that they would love to be able to brag about owning, because otherwise, if you're just talking about pictures of athletes, I mean, all you have to do is Google those.
That's exactly right. And I think what we're going to find is that there's a little bit of Emperor's New Clothes here. It's different when a musician creates an album or creates a song. And they limit the amount of access to certain parts of the song or certain mixes of the song, or there's nothing unique about Tiger Woods, the picture of Tiger Woods sinking a putt at Augusta, and you know, to close out the Masters. It was an amazing moment. It's also available every place you can get to a computer. So to say that you're going to spend any amount of money owning that image, what are you owning? And this is the kind of absurdity of the NFT world. And the problem is it's tainting what is a really, really good product, NFTs, which are smart contracts that allow you to create business logic that would allow you to participate in a secondary market, store value, and make sure that if trusted parties or untrusted parties are doing business outside of your knowledge, that there are still payments triggered and still when the conditions are met, the contract is executed. That's the beauty of an NFT. The beauty of an NFT is not, wow, I can get a GIF file of a GIF file that my friend has that everybody's got the same. It's gotten a little bit to the absurd right now. We're dropping NFTs for $12. Are they tickets to something? Do they get you into a lottery to get something else? Is there value created? What is it? Is it numbered? And so until you create some value other than the fact that, wow, I bought a Tiger Woods, NFT, that may be valuable to somebody, but I don't know that it's going to have you're not buying it for the secondary market. You're buying it to own. And again, not financial advice, just common sense.
Yeah, and on the part of the athlete or whoever selling the NFT, I mean, it's, why not? If people are willing to pay you for it, why not do it?
But Cisco, that's the whole point. It's like it's feeding on itself in a weird way. But I'm concerned personally that it's taking away from the world of decentralized finance, and it's also taking people who would ordinarily be smart business people and turning them into I guess we should just do this. No. What you should do is you should think up new business models that take advantage of the decentralized nature of this and empower people to do things they could not do other ways, and not try to create, the Emperor's New Clothes. And I really feel that some of this is that. And I'm not trying to take a shot at Tiger Woods. I wish him the very, very best. And, I'm a big fan and all that. But at the end of the day, I honestly don't know what dropping existing images on the internet and charging for them and calling it an NFT, you might as well just sell them the GIF file. There is no secondary market for this stuff. And, if someone's going to call me up and say I'm wrong, you know where to reach me. I'm easy to find at ShelleyPalmer.com.
And time will tell. I mean, it's the great thing about it is time will tell who the winner and loser in the transaction is. Thanks, Shelley Palmer. Up next, recognizing the signs, it's time to change jobs.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's been a record-setting time for people changing jobs. Choosing exactly when to move on can pose a challenge. Let's get some help from Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern, based here in Chicago. Rick, how do we know when it's time to go?
Well, I think one of the first things you have to ask yourself is, do you really need to go? What's motivating you to make that decision? Certainly, if the company is in financial straits, or if you feel like your position based on a merger or feedback that you've gotten, a performance review indicates that you might be at risk, that's the time to dust off your resume and start looking. But you have to pay attention to what you're going to, because the goal is to run to something, not from something. So if you have time, I think it's important for everyone to think about what it is that they're trying to replace or get that they're not getting from their current position. Good indicator of that is, do you dread going to work? Do you find yourself procrastinating a lot rather than doing work? Or do you feel like you're overqualified and not challenged by the work anymore? Those are good cues for you to think about it.
So what about the relationship with a boss? Does that at all impact whether you decide to stay or go? Because it could be good, it could be not so good.
Yeah, it's impossible to overemphasize that issue, that relationship. You know, people, the cliche in the human capital world is people quit bosses, they don't quit companies. And that's true. And that's for retention. In other words, if the culture and your reporting relationship is a good experience every day, you're far less likely to leave. And finding another company where you can have that relationship is challenging, because if they want you, they're not going to tell you about all the terrible things that they do later. They're going to try and look as appealing and be as positive as possible. The reality is going to come down the road. So that's a critical issue to pay attention to, is company culture.
Well, that also, though, puts you in a position where you may have an opportunity out there and you think it's a great opportunity, but you don't really know until you get in there. And that leads people to say, is it really worth leaving my job not really knowing what I'm getting into?
That's true. But I think we forget that we are, as humans, we're a lot more alike than we're different. Certainly the potential employer may not be as forthright, or maybe there's guilty of confirmation bias and think everything's great, whether it is or it isn't. But you can typically find people that have worked there or do work there who will give you a less biased review of what's going on. You can also look at the financials. You know, a company that is making its money on tenths of a penny doesn't have a lot of discretionary income, so they're at the mercy of the market. If things get tight, they're going to be forced to pull the trigger on people, whereas a company that has a better financial balance or a longer run for what they're trying to accomplish, that's a better place to be. Those are things that you have to pay attention to. And pay attention to how what you would do in that organization fits into the priorities of the company.
Thanks so much. Good insight from Rick Cobb, founder of 2Discern, a workplace consulting firm. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, making sure inflation is not eroding your assets.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Emergency rooms at children's hospitals in the Chicago area are jammed because of a spike in respiratory cases. The U.S. doubles its commitment to provide COVID vaccines to other countries. Personal Finance Wednesday, how being too conservative with your investments can hurt your bottom line. Also on the financial front, investment firm Robinhood testing so-called crypto wallets. WBBM Business, the Dow up 380, the NASDAQ is up 128, and the S&P up 45 points. Oil is up 2%. A mix of sun, clouds, a little scattered rain, high of 64 degrees today. Right now it's 59 degrees. Doctors are calling on parents not to bring their children to hospital emergency rooms unless it's absolutely necessary. They're being overwhelmed due to a sharp increase in respiratory cases. Dr. Tom Shanley is with Lurie Children's Hospital.
What we're urging for is the right level of care for your children. We have a broad system of care that spans from primary care to the most complex tertiary and quaternary care that can be provided at any children's facility. We urge you to utilize the resources of your primary care physicians and other providers to be able to talk to them about the symptoms that your children are having, to be therefore directed to the right level of care for them.
Wait times in the Lurie ER are up by around 300%. The United States is doubling its purchase of Pfizer COVID shots to right up to about a billion doses overall. They're going to share them with other countries. The stepped-up commitment marks the cornerstone of the global summit President Biden attended at the UN General Assembly. Around 160 million shots supplied by the U.S. have already been distributed to more than 100 countries. That is more than the rest of the world combined. The Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. It's 12:32.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Dow rising. All the major indexes are. It's up 384. NASDAQ up 130. And the S&P is up 46 points. Well, let's see what's going on. Chuck Carlson is here, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter based in Hammond. Chuck, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Yeah, we're seeing that willingness for investors to kind of buy the dip, which has been something that we have seen for the last really several months. Anytime the market has fallen even a skosh, investors have been willing to come in, and they're showing that today. I think they're emboldened a little bit today by the fact that it looks like the China Evergrande issue is certainly going to be contained, and the contagion there looks fairly limited. And I think there's probably some optimism in terms of what the Fed is going to be doing here in terms of near-term versus longer-term tapering. So you've got investors coming back in. I would caution that we had a pretty good start to yesterday's day that ended up, flat for the Dow, even down for the Dow, actually. So we'll see how the afternoon unfolds. But it looks like right now that, yes, investors have been willing to kind of step in and take advantage of some of the weakness that occurred on Monday.
Which is interesting because it means investors don't think that it's going to dip further, doesn't it? I mean, that's why they're willing to buy now.
Well, yes. Although, you know, to be fair, I think some investors, even if you think maybe it's going to dip further, they don't want to get into a situation where, like, they're going to hold all their powder until that perfect time, which rarely ever happens. And they figure, listen, we got to sell off pretty stiff one on Monday, one of the biggest one-day sell-offs that we've had in a long time. You know, let's take advantage of that and maybe put a little bit of powder back in. So I think there's still plenty that can come into this market, and I think investors are kind of waiting and seeing. You know, from a Dow Theory perspective, which is a tool that we use, you know, it's kind of an interesting potential inflection point here. Yes, the primary trend is still bullish, but, you know, we had that significant dip on Monday. We're getting a rally. If the rally continues a bit more, then that low that was established on Monday is going to be pretty relevant from a Dow Theory perspective. You do not want that low to get taken out if you want the primary trend to continue to be bullish, quite frankly.
So where maybe are some deals on this dip? Where do you see people actually buying this dip?
Yeah, I think you're seeing some people coming into tech and buying the dip. You've had some sell-offs and some high growth stocks there. You know, a stock that we like and follow, Qualcomm, QCOM is, you know, was a stock, the 52-week high was about 167. That stock's trading at about 132 right now, so it's down about 35 points. And you can kind of go across the spectrum of tech and see, you know, the Alphabets, the Amazons, stocks that did sell off, and I think they're drawing some investor money today.
And going forward, I mean, we're waiting to see what the Fed says here. How do you think that may play into how investors are feeling and where they're putting their money?
Yeah, I think, you know, investors are kind of trying to calibrate just when the Fed, if and when the Fed is start going to taper in earnest. And I think that's a factor. But quite honestly, I think the biggest factor that investors continue to weigh is really on the earnings side, in the sense that, you know, earnings comparisons are going to start to get tougher now. And the second quarter was kind of the apex of the earnings gains, given the weakness a year earlier due to, you know, the biggest impact by COVID. So, you know, the third quarter, fourth quarter, particularly first half of 2022, those earnings comparisons are going to get tougher. And investors are trying to weigh if, in fact, things like the Delta variant have taken enough of an edge off of the economy to maybe start seeing companies come in with profits that disappoint. So, you know, the third quarter earnings would start to come out probably in about 3.5 weeks in earnest. And particularly that guidance is going to be really closely watched by investors as they, again, try to calibrate exactly what earnings are going to do over the next four quarters relative to expectations.
Thanks so much for the analysis. Always good stuff. Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, making sure inflation doesn't drain your investment pool.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. This afternoon, we're helping you avoid being robbed by inflation. Helping us out, Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group at Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, before we get some tips on how to not get hammered by this, help us to understand how inflation robs us in retirement.
Well, at the end of the day, you know, inflation is the retirement killer. I think everyone in America thinks it's hypertension. No, it's not. Inflation is the retirement killer, because if you don't have a plan to double, if not triple, your income in retirement, you probably don't have a plan at all. It's like a horror movie, Cisco. Inflation's just slowly eroding our purchasing power, and we got to do everything we can to stand against it.
So what can we do? I guess what's the big number one takeaway if you want to avoid being robbed by inflation?
Well, you know, I think right now people should actually take a look. What we're talking about with people at the Wealth Management Group is everyone needs an emergency fund, but you don't want to have excess cash in the bank. You don't want to have hundreds of thousands of dollars earning point something, because if you look at the inflation data, PCE, CPI, CPIW, depending on the flavor of the day, you're going backwards at a rate to 5 to 6. So manage your cash with some basic inflation hedges. That means I bonds, Treasury inflation protection securities, high quality muni bonds to get started.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot of people, though, you start talking about bonds and people just they almost put too much of their money in that. I mean, how can they not be too conservative and yet also not risk losing a bunch of their money in retirement?
Cisco, I'm so happy you said that. You know, after you have your basic inflation hedges, those bonds we just talked about, then everyone's got to be focused right now on inflation beaters. And if someone says, Craig, what's an example of inflation beaters? Well, the most obvious is owning stocks. We need to get back to owning great companies of America that have a long history of growing their dividend, aka raising someone's income. And it helps when the price of the stock goes up over time, too. And I just want to make sure everybody has enough stock in their portfolio, because historically, it's one of the easiest ways to beat inflation.
And are you talking about that in retirement, where people would normally, I guess, be tempted to pull all of their money out of stocks?
I think that's where people get caught. You know, far too many people, especially with longevity today, being what it is, I consistently meet as a practitioner too many people on the cusp of, or those that are already retired, being underinvested. I just don't know, with 10-year treasury yields being where they are, that you're going to get retired on a rate of return of 1.3%. I would much rather own great companies of America with 2% dividends that have a chance to grow. So I think in particular, yes, retirees need to work with a good financial planner so they can model a risk budget and start creating an asset allocation that's going to get them through. And that is more critical than ever when you see the rising cost in everything that we're consuming.
Good insight. Thanks so much. That's Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. That's Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come, an investment firm embraces cryptocurrency.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The investment app Robinhood is testing crypto wallets with a group of select customers. Let's learn more from Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview. You find him online at senecalcapital.com. Bill, it's crypto wallets. Help us to understand what a crypto wallet is.
Well, a crypto wallet, Cisco, is an application that you run on your phone then identifies how much cryptocurrency and which cryptocurrency is held in the cloud, like in the blockchain. And so normally Robinhood keeps all your private keys. In essence, Robinhood is the holder and the bearer of your safety deposit box keys in their app, right? And so what they're doing now is they're going to permit users to actually hold their own private keys and their access to their own private wallets. So right now, Robinhood offers trading access to about 7 cryptocurrencies versus, say, Coinbase, which has like 50 or more cryptocurrencies. So once again, we're seeing this parallel universe between traditional investing and digital assets and cryptocurrency is unfolding and being constructed right in front of our eyes. A year ago, cryptocurrency maybe made up 3 or 4% of Robinhood's revenue. Now it's 50% of their revenue. So they're going to chase this carrot in order to make improvements to the bottom line.
Yeah, they got to be figuring, too, if they allow these wallets where people can sort of move crypto back and forth from other platforms, it's only going to make them continue to be one of the go-to apps. If they keep it all in-house where you have to buy and sell within their app, that seems to limit their effectiveness.
Absolutely. And again, you know, Robinhood is generally for younger investors. It has an amazing user interface, as well as Coinbase. And the truth is, you know, Catherine Wood, who is the CEO and CIO, Chief Investment Officer of the ARK Investment Funds, they hold Robinhood shares in 3 of their funds, but they also hold Coinbase in greater amounts. As a matter of fact, they own Coinbase, Grayscale Bitcoin Investment and Trust, Robinhood, Circle, Square, Twitter, like they own all these payment channel rails. And so we're just seeing, again, this activity and interest spill over from traditional finance into cryptocurrency. And what people want, especially young people, is they don't trust the system. They don't trust the man. And they want to be able to move cryptocurrency of their own personal holdings in and out. And what eventually you'll see happen is, why should you pay 2.5% or 3% margin on Robinhood for shares and options and gold, when you could theoretically use your Bitcoin holdings as collateral against your margin? So like, there's opening up a whole new avenue of monetary platforms for users. And eventually we're going to see that across all platforms, banks, lending, the whole shebang, all of this decentralized finance.
Yeah, really fascinating to see how it is really just grown so quickly. Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management. You'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.